You're listening to WMPG, Gorham, Portland. I'm Tom Bell. Coming up next in about 3 minutes, the award-winning public affairs show, Let's Connect Greater Portland. Every week, Christina Egan interviews some of the movers and shakers in the region about some of the big pressing issues like housing and transportation and the economy. And I'm here in the studio today with one of those movers and shakers, Andrew Zaro. Hello, Andrew.
Oh, you're too kind, Tom. Thank you so much. Always a pleasure, highlight of my week to be at the studio with you and Anella and all the great people at WMPG.
Thank you.
So we're here today not only to talk about Let's Connect, our public policy show that honestly we've covered some really cool stories in the last year. A couple that come to mind for me are the Portland Recode show, which is a big deal. We've had conversations around tourism in Greater Portland. We've talked about transportation and EVs. We've really we've talked to a lot of folks about you know, that people are taking action to better their communities here. It's an honor, honestly.
I think public affairs shows at WMPG are really bring the community into community radio. Mm-hmm. And we are all volunteers, but there is an expense, like this. I'm looking right now at this brand new clock. This is so exciting. We have a clock in the studios here that is accurate. I've been dreaming of such a clock.
It is a nice one.
And we have a clock. Why do we have this brand new clock? It costs like $250. Because people contributed to the station, and that's what we're here asking people to do today, right now. We're in the middle of a bake-a-thon, and we need you to call. What's the number to call, Andrew?
It is 874-3000, or you can donate online at wmpg.org. So go ahead. You know, we love that we have a new clock that keeps us on time, but this is a group effort. You know, this is a community radio at its finest, and it can only exist when folks like you donate. What you can, $5, $10, do what you can. Again, 874-3000.
And we actually have two new clocks. We have a clock in the live lounge and a clock in the studio here.
They're
the exact same time. This is so exciting. And why do we have these clocks? How can we afford these clocks, Andrew?
It's a great question, Tom. I want to thank you for bringing it up. We can afford clocks and much more only by the support of our listeners. So again, if you want to contribute, it's 874-3000, or you can go to wmpg.org and you can donate online. And you can't see them because it is radio, but we have some great new T-shirts that are locally screen printed. And if you donate, you will get a T-shirt.
The clock says 3 seconds. 3 seconds of the show. Here we go. Let's connect Greater Portland with Christina Egan.
Welcome to a special roundtable of state Senate candidates in Greater Portland. Thank you for joining us. Today, we're hosting a one-hour forum for candidates running for the Maine State Senate in the 9 Senate districts served by the Greater Portland Council of Governments. I'm Christina Egan, your moderator. The Greater Portland Council of Governments, or as we call it, GPCOG, is a nonpartisan agency that works with every member of the legislature. Our conversation today is about policy, not politics.
I'm Rick Bennett. I have the honor of serving the people of 14 towns in Western Maine in the state Senate currently, and I actually probably stretch the definition of Greater Portland when you think about the places I represent, because I represent from Fryeburg and Brownfield on the New Hampshire line, across through the Bridgeton-Harrison area, which is in Cumberland County, over to the Oxford Hills, and then to the outskirts of Lewiston Auburn and Minot Mechanic Falls. And I've had the pleasure of serving now since 2020, but I had earlier service in the House and the Senate, and had served in the late 90s and through the early aughts, as we say, and had served as president of the Senate when we had a tied Senate back then. I decided to run for re-election because I think politics is broken and we need to fix it. And I thought, you know, maybe I had something with my previous experience, my business experience, my family experience that I could bring in a unique way to contribute to today's discussions about many, many issues. But I think fundamentally we have a broken politics that, you know, money is metastasized, particularly dark money in politics. There's a lot of polarization, hyper-partisanship. People don't talk to each other anymore. and a lot of decision making done in caucuses rather than on the floor of the Senate. Having said that, you know, I've worked with many of the other people here on the in the program today very constructively on a whole range of issues in a bipartisan way. So I've been enjoying coming back to the legislature and actually getting work done for the people I represent.
Hi, I'm Tim Nagel. I represent Senate District 26, which is Casco, Raymond, Windham, Frye Island, and parts of Westport. I'm running to represent my district and ensure that we continue to have clean air and water, affordable prescription medications, and lower property taxes where possible. It's important to me that we continue to make Maine a place where people can thrive and have good jobs, good benefits, and just have an overall good life.
Hi, my name is Ann Carney. I represent Senate District 29, which includes South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, and a little bit of Scarborough, kind of the northeastern corner. I serve as the Senate Chair of the Judiciary Committee, and I also serve on the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and I'm the Senate Chair of the Gun Safety Caucus in the legislature. And I am running for re-election because I want to continue serving my constituents. The issues that they care about, I think, are really important to our state, including increased gun safety, environmental protection, which is a very significant issue in South Portland in particular because of the oil terminal facilities, and housing, which I know is a statewide priority. But I'm excited to be working on all of those again next year.
Yeah. So my name is Dustin Warren. And I'm running as an independent for the District 20, which is New Gloucester, Auburn, Poland, and Durham. I want to say thank you for having me here and excited to be with this great team here as well. What I tell folks initially is I'm just a kid from Aroostook County. I grew up in Presque Isle and graduate of Presque Isle High School in 06. And I have that background and that understanding of local and rural politics to aid me in what I've been doing the last 3 years, which is I was elected to the select board here in New Gloucester in 2021 and been serving in that capacity and now chair. And so for me, I'm running to, one, be a voice for many unheard or small municipalities that tend to not have their voice in politics. And similar to what Rick said, you know, a lot of the politics now is conversation that's broken. And so I'm hoping to bring practical solutions to a lot of the conversations that have been stalled. And then finally, one of the big things that I hope to bring is I'm a facilitator at heart. It's part of what I also do in my daytime job as a racial equity and reconciliation advocate. So I'm hoping to facilitate and bring both sides together to find those practical solutions. So I'm excited for the race that I'm in and really been enjoying sort of getting to learn along the way, although I'm not there yet. I'm hopefully looking forward to representing my district in November.
Hi, I'm Stacey Brenner, and I represent most of Scarborough, the part that Senator Carney doesn't represent, and all of Gorham in the Maine State Senate. I am the Senate Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Committee, and I've also served on the Veteran and Legal Affairs Committee and the Health Coverage, Insurance, and Financial Services Committee. I'm a Senate representative on the Climate Council and also the Senate Chair of the PFAS Advisory Fund. I am looking forward to being reelected so that I can go back and continue to do good work for my constituents around democracy and protecting justice and human rights. I find that one of the superpowers of being a legislator is that you have the opportunity to convene people for stakeholder meetings and to dig deep into issues. And I'm looking forward to continuing to use that opportunity to move conversations forward for issues that really are meaningful for not only Scarborough and Gorham, but also the greater state around housing and education, climate change and clean energy, smart growth, and all the other things that are meaningful for a good life here in the state of Maine.
In 2022, the state passed LD 2003, a new law directing municipalities to adjust their zoning to welcome more housing development. Since then, housing construction has increased, but we still have more housing to build to meet the state's housing production goals. What role should the legislature play in continuing the effort to build enough new housing in our region and across Maine?
In the previous budget, we invested over $100 million in in attempts to create affordable housing. Those attempts have been successful in some point. The high points are we have eviction prevention programs to keep people in their current living situation. We have assistance for lower income buyers. They could get assistance with their closing costs if they buy a home. And we've also given incentives to developers to create affordable housing projects. I think we need to evaluate those programs and see if they're actually how they're working. Obviously, we can't just pop up housing overnight. And I think we can continue to evaluate those and decide whether or not we need to increase the availability of those or try different programs.
Okay, thank you. All right, Anne.
Yeah, and I'll just pick up on what Tim said about evaluation, because I think that's really the role of the legislature. We're the policymakers in state government, and we've become aware as policymakers that our state hasn't taken a lead in setting housing policy. And so I think that that's our role to determine where the gaps are in our housing, the options for housing in our state. So, for example, we know that there's kind of an across-the-board deficit in housing, all kinds of dwelling units at every level of affordability. But we've seen things like the lack of housing with for people who are unhoused, who need services in order to stay housed. And so we just, this past session, created the Housing First program, which will be a really wonderful proven program to help unhoused people not only get housing in the immediate time frame, but then to become stably housed over the rest of their lives.
Thank you. Dustin.
So a couple of different things. One thing that I think the legislator could do is really think about this in three different ways. There's workforce housing, affordable housing, and traditional housing. And I think if you separate those three out, you can have three different conversations to get you to some practical solutions. From a municipality side, what we've seen is when there's an opportunity, it's the available land that we have access to. And one of the big things is we enacted, when LD 2003 got enacted, we began to go through a process of changing our zoning. Not every municipality has either done that or has the ability to do that in a quick way. And so it can hold up a lot of the housing that could take place. Another big thing for our municipality specifically is even if we find specific land, the amount of money it takes to go through engineering studies, what it takes to just prepare a piece of land to actually build housing on it, some municipalities may not have the budget for that. So I think one of the key things is working with municipalities and their budgetary options to be able to make that that leap to have housing in a specified piece of land. One of the other things that I know the legislature has already done is LD 1721, which I think is transitional housing, using a nonprofit to sort of improve how we get individuals into housing opportunities. Can we invest more in that in terms of the housing options that we have? And my other thing that I want to begin to really think about is can those who are renters, and this would have to work with landlords as well, but can renters gain equity while they're renting? And I think that oftentimes is a really key piece about being a first-time home buyer or buying that next home, is can you have equity in the rental market? There'd be a lot of pieces I know to work out, but it's something that I think could at least be a new avenue that we haven't thought of. So I offer maybe those three as options that LD 2003 has given us sort of a view or a lens into what we could do with housing.
Great. Thank you. All right, it's Stacey. Well, my smart friends here all speak my mind, but I will add a few things. I think that the figure that floats around is 84,000 units of housing are needed in order to alleviate our housing crisis. So that looks like housing on all levels. So when you build new housing, for example, to allow seniors to downsize, you free up a unit that allows a first-time home buyer to enter the market. So making sure that there's opportunities for first-time home buyers to be supported in their ability to have a down payment. The Housing First program is crucial to making sure that we have a robust social safety net to support our most vulnerable folks that are seeking housing and are in need of a place to rest their head. So when I think about housing, I think about heads in beds and how can we have as broad of a brushstroke of types of housing available for folks. And I think the main legislature and
our executive branch's investment in housing over the last session has been really unprecedented. And watching how Maine Housing unrolls and unveils that money across the state in all communities, rural, suburban, urban, is going to be really important. So that evaluation component will be crucial. But for Scarborough and Gorham, Senate District 30 was the fastest growing district in all of the state. So there was a point in 2021-22 where I represented more people than anyone in the state of Maine just based on growth. So for a region like Southern Maine, we need to think about what it looks like to invest in all of the other infrastructure associated with housing so that it makes it easier for municipalities to say yes around traffic, around school growth, and municipal services. So if we don't figure out how to support municipalities in that kind of growth, we're not going to be able to get them to say yes to housing in the way that the state sees the need and how we're going to meet it.
Great. Thank you, Steve. Rick.
Yeah, I watched with dismay some of the voting at the municipal level on some housing projects, where people have shut the door for whatever reason, NIMBYism or just whatever the concerns might be. And I think I don't know if everybody in our state really shares the sense that I'm hearing all of us share about the dire need for housing that we have. It is absolutely a supply issue, and it's that 84,000 units that Stacy spoke about is just to kind of keep pace with known demand. If our economy grows at all, we're going to be severely short on housing. I come from a town, actually, that had a very robust manufacturing housing industry, Oxford, where we had 1,000 people in Oxford just 20 years ago working in providing housing. They were manufacturing plants, had 5 manufacturing plants, building modular and mobile homes. We had set crews. We have retailers. We have haulers, people who drove these houses in boxes all across New England. And with the financial crisis in 2008, 2009, that entire industry has disappeared. The 3 of the plants that were making housing are shuttered. They've been converted to other purposes. 2 of them, they're growing medical marijuana in them. One is open. The other one is mothballed. And I think we need to deal with the supply issue aggressively. And we should think domestically. What are Maine's strengths? We still have a lot of talented people in the Oxford community who know this business and could be reemployed in this business and want to work in this business. I was talking with some the other day. But we need to provide some incentives, I think. And there have been some pilot programs using manufactured housing made in Maine to provide affordable housing across rural Maine. And I think that we need to investigate that. And so we're also going to need to look at other states, like Colorado has a program that they've recently passed to stimulate domestic manufactured housing using domestic Colorado natural resources. Well, we have lots of woods here in Maine, and we got the building supplies. We got the people. Pennsylvania has a program called Whole Home Repair, and particularly in rural Maine, we have a lot of dilapidated housing that needs to be repaired in order to be habitable, and that's an opportunity for us as well.
Thank you, Rick. I'm going to do a quick follow up, and I'm going to start with you and just on housing. So, we need 84,000 units, what have you said? And we also know that it matters where the housing goes. How do you see housing kind of nestling into our communities? Do you have any thoughts about where the housing ought to go as municipalities are thinking about their land use? And Anne, we'll do 1 minute each on this.
Okay. So thank you for the question. I think that we know from an environmental perspective that it's really important to have the housing near the jobs and near the schools. And so, in Senate District 29, what that looks like is continuing to build housing close to the municipal centers in the district. And I like that concept because it also allows communities that have a lot of green space, like South Portland, Cape Elizabeth, and Scarborough, to continue to maintain those green spaces with their environmental benefits, as well as reducing use of fossil fuels and transportation.
Great. Kustin.
Two that come to mind. One is specifically for New Gloucester. I've always said the last 3 years is to think about what is the conserved land that we've been holding. We may be holding too much, and there may be key places that we could put housing. That's a larger conversation for the municipality, but I'm just considering what are you holding and what can you work with. The other thing, I think the state legislature passed LD 492, which is using vacant spaces or vacant retail spaces. So a lot of malls or other spaces, I think some schools have been repurposed. Those actually work really quickly because the plumbing and the structure is already in place. So again, looking at some of those vacant lots or vacant spaces that were previously retail and converting those into housing may be a short term, something that can be looked at in terms of where you would put housing.
Thanks. Stacy.
Thanks for the question. I think all of the conversation around smart growth is really crucial in Scarborough and Gorham, making sure we take advantage of the opportunities for infill development in spaces that are already paved over in some way is some of the most effective spots we can focus housing efforts out of the gate. And I think it's crucial to have set aside conservation land and hold it up in high regard and not compromise it for construction of new housing, because we do have plenty of opportunities to put housing into other spaces without compromising that conservation opportunity. It allows for the growth of communities to have the ability to access green space no matter where you are. So we want everyone to be able to access a park or a hiking trail in the town of Scarborough without having to go too far, so that it's not out of anybody's capacity to reach those spaces and enjoy them and grow up with them as children and access them as seniors.
Great.
I think maybe my district has different needs from what I'm hearing from people who are more congested in the greater Portland area proper. We've got lots of land in rural Maine, not too far from here. My house is about a 35-minute drive from downtown Portland. And I think it's probably next, that whole region is next for the growth. What's really critical is affordability. And I think we need to have a new view about development, much more cluster-oriented development, because in a lot of places in rural and suburban Maine, there are minimum lot sizes, which frustrate the opportunity for developers to really provide good services while providing for green space and recreational opportunities that most Maine people want, whether they live in more urban Portland area or suburban or rural Maine. They want to be close to recreation. They want to be close to the outdoors.
And so much harmony here. Tim,
so
us out.
There's three concepts in real estate, and it's location, location, and location. I want to echo what Senator Bennett said. People want to live near recreation. They also want to live near their work. I think that's an important factor as well. Each town generates on every 10 years, they should be creating a new comprehensive plan. When I was on the town council in Windham, we accepted a new comprehensive plan, and we designated growth areas and areas in town that we wanted to keep growing. And we incentivized the developers to build in the growth areas and made it, I don't want to say harder, but made it the rural areas grow slower so that they're not, you know, plowing in empty fields. And I think that those are the things that matter most to people is keeping those conserved areas available for recreation, hiking, biking, whatever, and also trying to make it easy for them to get to work or to shop.
Great. Thanks, Tim. All right, Justin, we're going to start with you for the next question, which is about our changing climate.
All right.
So last winter's storms.
All right, everybody. You are listening to Let's Connect Greater Portland. I'm Andrew Zaro, and you are listening on WMPG. This is our Begathon, and a reminder to all of you that this community radio exists because of listeners like you. So if you can give what you can, call 874-3000 or go to WMPG.org. Shows like Let's Connect foster community conversation. they highlight dialogue about the things that matter most to us in local policy, the things that impact our lives. It's something that's really important to me as a former elected and candidate. We came on this show and we were able to connect with listeners, and we keep doing that every week. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had the candidates for Westbrook Mayor on, and this was the only venue that they had the opportunity to talk about their policies that will impact you. So please support Community Radio 874-3000 and give what you can. It means the world to us, and it'll allow us to continue bringing you shows like Let's Connect. Thank you so much for listening.
Well, I would continue in the Senate. We don't sit according to party. We're kind of mixed together. And that has been fantastic at helping us forge friendships and working relationships. And I think we could go one step further and perhaps have like a monthly tea or social hour that becomes something that everybody really enjoys going to and socializing with each other.
Thank you, Anne. Dustin?
I mean, I'm running as an independent, so I feel like I'm trying to bridge two thought patterns together. If it were me, I'd want to continue in bringing both sides together and facilitate conversations that have been difficult, which is something that I have great pride and skill set in, and picking, you know, issues that are always polarizing and being able to guide a meaningful conversation to hear one another. So maybe that would be my way of showing how to reach across both aisles.
Great. Stacey? I'm going to keep inviting my Republican colleagues out to lunch and talking about everything but politics so that we can know each other as people and learn about each other's lives and families. And I find that that personal relationship is what makes the difference when we're talking about policy. Mm-hmm. Rick?
Well, Senator Carney and I serve on the Rules Committee. For the first time in 6 years, we're actually looking at our rules. And the legislature was a disaster, really a managerial disaster over the last session. We have lots of things to work on there. I would like to see, as part of that process, result in less time working on issues in caucus and discussing issues in party caucuses and doing more work across the aisle, actually having conversations in the Senate chamber and in other venues where we can actually understand other people's points of view and not just get handed talking points.
Thank you. Tim, you got the final word here.
I think a lot of people, there is a big misconception that we don't agree on a lot of things. And I think the two parties agree on more than people believe. I think about all of the bills that just go under the hammer that are worked out bipartisanly in the committee and come out with a unanimous report. But I think we can definitely improve on that.
And that is a great theme to end on, of bringing you all together. I heard a tremendous amount of harmony tonight from all of you, even though many of you represent many different kinds of communities, different parties. So I want to thank you all for being here and sharing your viewpoints with folks that will be voting in November. And I want to thank all of you who've joined us today for the Senate Candidates Roundtable hosted by the Greater Portland Council of Governments. Thank you.
That was Let's Connect Greater Portland, one of the public affairs show here at WMPG. And this is a show that every week we bring in the movers and shakers in the region talking about the issues that are really important here, such as housing, the economy, climate change. I'm here with Andrew Zaro, who is often a host of Let's Connect. Andrew, any shows that are your favorite?
Oh, boy, it's hard to pick. There have been so many this year. You know, I think a couple that are coming to mind are the forum we did a couple weeks ago for the Westbrook mayoral candidates. We had an amazing show on EV infrastructure and how that looks in different communities. You know, like you said, the list goes on and on in terms of the policy areas that we talk about. And one thing that amazes me is just how much is happening in the Greater Portland region. And so opportunities like Let's Connect in collaboration with WMPG gives us the chance to connect listeners with the good work that's happening and gives them a chance to get involved. So for those of you listening, if you like Let's Connect, if you like discussing public policy, call 874-3000 and give what you can today, or you can go to WMPG.org.
Thank you, Andrew. My favorite shows are when journalists are on Let's Connect. We had Eric Russell, who did that big series on housing, and that was such a, you know, he was so great on the air when we have experts like that. Hannah LeClaire, also a Press Herald reporter, talked with me about luxury housing. Does luxury housing help the housing crisis? And her research showed that actually it does, because it increases the supply of housing. Call in, everyone, 874-3000, and contribute to WMPG. Coming up next, Democracy Now! At WMPG, Gorham, Portland, 90.9 FM.